This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure. We will be sure. Oh, glory.
Glory. Glory.
Oh.
Hands to the heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisited us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walked through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down.
Good morning. Welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I know you all like listening to the song, but when you got a guess is brilliant as the one I have this morning, you know, you kind of want to get right to it. I don't want to miss a moment of the time that I have with him in studio this morning. Go tell mama, go tell daddy. The doctor is here. You know him as the commander of the Defense Force. Dr. Raymond King is my guest this morning. As we talk about what's happening, it's been just over a year that he's been sitting in the top chair. Let me publicly say congratulations 1 year later. Now that I have the opportunity to him, to have him face to face in studio with me, Dr. King, good morning,
Mr. Miller, my dear friend, colleague, fellow soldier. Thanks for inviting me. Good morning, Bahamas.
How are you feeling? You look good.
I feel great.
I see you have a little bit more silverware added to the decorations there.
Well deserved, well earned, after 34 years of toiling.
Yeah. All right, Dr. King. So there are. It's been a year, and so I wanted to get you in studio. I wanted to allow the Bahamian people an opportunity to hear from the commander of their military, for them to know exactly where are you. You know, what is your intention moving forward? Exactly, after having a 1 year of being able to implement the plans and policies, how things are going down there at Coral Harbor Base, and so. Let me again thank you for coming. You know, a lot of people, Dr. King, when I talk about the commander of the Defense Force, you know, you hear about the many of your predecessors, right? Chief among them is Clifford Scavala. If there are people around here that still do not know that Clifford Scavala isn't the commodore, right? And so I want to give people an opportunity to know who is Raymond King.
Concisely, a 34-year career officer within the Royal Bahamas Defense Force, mm-hmm. a member of the Seventh-day Adventist faith,
okay.
a father of two sons, seven lovely grandchildren, a husband of one wife. Mm-hmm. Jeff celebrated my 29th wedding anniversary on the 31st,
okay.
and a servant of the people.
All right, and you've done a little bit of studies as well. Where did your studies take you?
My studies, my first and second degrees were focused on accounting, mm-hmm. accounting management, business management. Mm-hmm. My graduate degree was in business administration, a master's okay. in business administration. And my doctoral degree was an educational degree with a focus on leadership and management.
Okay, so you have a doctor's degree in leadership and management. And you are now the commander of the Defense Force. Some people will ask, well, you know, he could have gone and be an accountant. He could have gone and, I don't know, work for one of the big Fortune 500s. He's done military life. His degrees are wide-ranging. How exactly are you seeing those things come into force or come to bear as you are now taking command of the military?
The common thread between all of my degrees, mm-hmm. even my first and second degrees, dealt primarily with management, human resource management, in addition to accounting.
Mm-hmm.
My MBA degree had more to do with business management,
mm-hmm.
being able to manage an organization.
Okay.
The doctoral degree was focused on organizational leadership. Mm-hmm. And so the application of leadership and management skills can be applied to any organization mm-hmm. once you apply those principles effectively.
Okay.
And my performance thus far could act as a litmus test in terms of the relevance of particularly my doctoral degree, mm-hmm. leadership and management. I was able to hone in all of my informal, informal management and leadership training mm-hmm. throughout the years. Mm-hmm. Started off at the Britannia Royal Naval College, came back, did a number of leadership and management programs within the Defense Force mm-hmm. training department with the human resource management area from the public service, and which was topped off by staff training at the United States Naval War College. And in addition to all of the vessels that I've commanded throughout my career, and it was several, and all of the command opportunities I had as head of departments, mm-hmm. for example, command administration, commanding officer of the Southern Command, commanding officer of HMBS Nassau. And so over the years, and I could vividly recall one or two of my predecessors saying to me, just relax. You've been preparing mm-hmm. for the last 34 years. So every experience you would have had, whether it was good or bad, there were lessons to be learned. And I found that the leadership and management focus in my doctoral program brought everything together in a formal construct in terms of organizational leadership, mm-hmm. being able to effectively at this time manage the Royal Bahamas Defense Force.
So, Dr. King, tell us then, what are the operational guidelines of your policies?
Okay, I have several command priorities. In terms of operations, there are really succinctly four key areas, which is underscored by my maritime security plan for the year 2021. Being able to execute intelligence-driven operations, mm-hmm. decentralized operations, joint maritime interdiction operations, and enhancing our security cooperation with local, regional, and international partners.
And exactly how does that spell out? Particularly, let's talk about the decentralization. So the decentralization in your plan has been growing over this last couple of years. You, of course, are inheriting it a year in now. How does the decentralization part of the pillars of your plan look when we think about it tangibly?
It's actually expanding. We have made significant progress in terms of our presence mm-hmm. in the southeastern Bahamas, primarily HMBS Machu Town mm-hmm. in Inagua. Mm-hmm. The government would have invested significant sums in the lodging and the various infrastructure need to operate effectively, as well as a maritime center in Inagua. Mm-hmm. We currently have a presence in Ragged Island, where the base container city has been set up. Mm-hmm. We have personnel there on a continuous basis, and we intend to build out over the next budget year more permanent brick and mortar structures mm-hmm. to house our person. So it is going well. The intent is similar to what we have in Coral Harbor Base, an operation command center.
Okay.
We have an operation command center in Inagua. We have a maritime surveillance system or a coastal radar system mm-hmm. to support our operations. The docks, dredging, all of that was done under Sandy Bottom project.
Okay. Is that completed?
Well, the Sandy Bottom project is completed.
Okay.
It's completed. But there were components that were excluded that we now have to execute as those permanent structures, like mm-hmm. the aircraft hangar, mm-hmm. The warehouses, the mechanical workshops,
okay.
those sort of structures and concrete lodging mm-hmm. for our personnel. In Ragged Island, we have our presence there. The intent is gratis from the United States Embassy and their government to install a maritime surveillance system or coastal radar system in Ragged Island as well. And we intend to build out with a presence in Eleuthera,
okay.
Exuma, and Andrews.
Okay.
No, let me be corrected. In Exuma and Andrews, and eventually a more permanent presence in Abaco, Grand Bahama. And we already have a presence in Bimini.
Okay.
But the strategic plan is that at each of those locations, where we have bases is to have an operation command center. We're going to have a coastal radar setup, and our drone operations, the long-range drones, will be operated from those sites as well. Mm. And so the audio-visual contract that was just signed last week, that is geared towards bringing all of those sensory inputs, all of the satellite-based systems we have, even on board our vessels and our aircrafts, whatever the coastal radars see, whatever the drones are able to see, to bring all of that sensory data into the main command communication center at HMBS Coral Harbor. Mm-hmm. And so we could have a common operating picture, and that will be mirrored at the Ministry of at the Ministry of National Security, and to enable government ministers, if you have to set up a national emergency operational center, the ministers, the Honolulu members, whomever, it can be managed. We would know exactly what's happening and have greater situational awareness.
What is the fixed wing capacity going to be like in that plant? Because I heard about the drones, I heard about the satellite static bases, etc. I know that there was once a time that fixed wing largely played a role in that decentralization. Is there a plan to expand that, or is that something that you're walking back?
Well, no, we're not walking it back. We're actually trying to expand it.
Okay.
We have three operational, we have three aircrafts, two of which are fully operational. Okay. Just came back from repairs and upgrades. Mm-hmm. The intent is to place one of those aircrafts in the southeastern Bahamas.
Okay.
One to be here central and one in the northern Bahamas to support our operations.
Okay.
And so it's a combination between the fixed wing, the drone operations, the coastal radars, as well as the intelligence, the good intelligence we get from our local and regional and international partners in terms of knowing who is in our domain and what they're doing.
All right. So if you're just tuning in, I'm with the commander of the Defense Force. Dr. Raymond King is his name. He's joining me in studio as we're talking about what exactly is the commander's intent. He recently celebrated 1 year, and so I thought it would be good to have him come and let us know what has it been like over the last year. Where are we? Where were we? And where are we going? And so please invite people to tune in. I'm going to open the lines at the end of the show. You can give me a call, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, or you can text me on 422-4796. Dr. King, my next question for you is, I noticed that there has been, and this is attaching to your decentralization mandate in your operational plan, I noticed that there has been whether a lack of reporting or a lack of landings, but for whatever it is worth, there appears to have been a significant decrease in either migrant activity or migrant landings. How is your decentralization plan kind of, I guess, kicking the legs from underneath that chair?
Well, Mr. Miller, it's a combination of several things, but it's underscored by my security campaign, which is decentralized, intelligence-driven, and joint maritime interdiction operations.
Okay,
that underscores everything. But the actual strategy comprises three components. Maritime domain awareness, having the ability to be aware, situational awareness of whomever is in our maritime domain. The second component is maritime domain control. We have to be able to control the access to our waters. The third component is the maritime domain dominance. We need to patrol. This is our domain. We patrol in a layered format using our air and sea assets, as well as the relationship we have with the United States government, Turks and Caicos stroke United Kingdom, even the Cuban Border Patrol, and CARICOM impacts. We receive good intelligence from those entities as well as the Canadians. We get good satellite feedback. So the maritime domain awareness is the central component in terms of knowing who is in your domain, being able to control that domain, and being able to dominate that the domain. And we are executing a layered security structure. And without going into too much detail, but one of the first things I did on returning to the Defense Force was to appoint an operations commander with the level of experience that I have.
Okay.
And so we communicate very, very frequently. Yeah. And we understand, because we have comparable experiences. Senior Commander Vims, he has executed the plan to perfection thus far. We have sort of deterred or dissuaded, have dissuaded migrants from even attempting to reach New Providence. Once or twice they attempted, and we basically forced them in the direction that they don't want to go. So they would end up on islands. It was easy just to corral them and take them back.
Right.
We've done a wonderful job also with the poaching. There are less sightings. Our intel suggests that. The feedback from the fishers suggests that their traps haven't been tampered with. Their yields have been higher, and they've always congratulated us on our presence. Every other day, they see a Defense Force vessel in the area. And so that layered structure, strategy, using our aircraft, our vessels, and so on, we look forward to being able to utilize those drones, particularly those long-range drones from Inagua, Ragged Island, and they can go out, bird's eye view, go for probably about 100-plus miles. We'll know who's there. And we have the capability of setting drones from our vessels eventually. And so that enhances our capabilities significantly. So it has been deliberate in what we've done. What we are also doing, you want to be able to tap into this illegal drug trafficking and weapons smuggling as well.
Sure.
And so we have worked along with the Belize Marine Unit at Ragged Island, where we have run operations as well as Inagua. And as we, in very short order, position reliable interceptors with 30, 42 meters in Inagua and Ragged Island, as well as those 60 meters roving in between, using our landing craft. Hopefully she returns soon from Curacao from our dry docking exercise as a supply chain. And so those assets, along with the personnel, will be deployed for up to about 3 months. You get into that area for 3 months, that is the area of operations. You take control of that area. And so it has been deliberate in what we've done, but we seek to have greater success, because I would like to achieve more in terms of drug arrests currently enjoyed by the Belize Force. We look forward to tapping into that intelligence and celebrating those successes as well.
Now, Commander, I want to make a small deviation. I heard you talk in your international relations. I only just recently ended my series with the HMBS Flamingo, be it May 10, was the Flamingo anniversary, the 41st. You did mention, though, that your relationship with Cuba is one that's it's healing, or is it healed?
It has healed, and I take no credit, because my predecessors would have done the legwork.
Okay.
Commodore Bethel was instrumental, he along with Commodore Bow, in establishing this maritime relationship with the Cuban border control, where we share intelligence. We work jointly together. Because there was a period when most of those poaching vessels would seek to evade capture by moving into the territorial waters of Cuba.
Right.
But that doesn't happen anymore, because with our joint relationship now and with the partnership we have. So that escape would have closed. And that has contributed significantly to our success. So we have a very, very good relationship now.
Okay. That is in the toolbox to fight.
Transnational. And we are currently engaged in a comprehensive maritime agreement to have that signed off, where we both would commit resources to the common fight towards those common threats that we both face.
Now, I heard you also speak to the Lawrence Major. I want to get to that question. The Lawrence Major, everybody now knows she was in Curacao and that she suffered some damage. Tell us a bit about how that is coming along, whether or not that is going to be something that kind of takes that out of the arsenal for a long period of time, as well as we noticed that there have been last year in office for sure, what appears to be increases in occurrences at sea and vessel damages and that kind of stuff. How exactly is that affecting your plan, and what exactly are you doing to remedy that?
The difficult thing for persons to accept is that these things are inherent in a maritime domain. The maritime domain is very dynamic. Environmental conditions could change at a moment's notice. Wind state, sea state, currents, all of those things could change at a moment's notice. And they are more apt to happen when you have new appointments.
Okay.
My experience has shown me, and my own experience being commanding officer of many vessels, it's during the first three patrols when something can happen. Because it takes some time for a new commanding officer to become familiar with the ship handling characteristics of the vessel, mm-hmm. Having confidence in its navigational equipment. Mm-hmm. Because all of these equipment over time develop errors. Mm-hmm. And once you're on board those vessels for a while, you get to learn what the errors are.
And make the human adjustment.
And you compensate.
Right.
And the third component is the crew coordination. Mm-hmm. It takes some time with a new commanding officer to get comfortable with his or her new crew and to work effectively. And so those components, it takes about three patrols before it all comes together. And mm-hmm. that is when it is most vulnerable and incidents may tend to happen. If you go back into history and you reflect, and if you really examine it, those incidents would usually occur when you have no point. I had a decision to make mm-hmm. once I assumed command. We have had some good commanding officers at sea. Okay? They were doing well, but what I call glory holes. Mm-hmm. Okay? I'll give you an example. Commander William Sturb. He's done exceptional.
Yeah.
Exceptionally.
A workhorse, yeah.
Right. Now, and he was successful with probably the most arrests within the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. Now, I could have left those good CEOs on their crafts, but I said no. I have to prepare this organization for the future. Mm-hmm. So I needed to take those persons off those vessels and appoint them so they could create organizational impacts. Mm-hmm. William Sir, for example, he was appointed as my search and rescue coordinator, my sea training officer. He now leads the bridge simulation training. He has a mobile training team that sails on board these crafts to ensure the crew coordination mm-hmm. is intact, ensure that what the persons would have learned in the simulator, they're able to apply it and to go through all the emergency drills. And that was my response to those incidents.
Okay.
We have now taken off, and we're doing exceptionally well, but we've also reinstituted the craft command proficiency course to ensure that only suitably qualified persons mm-hmm. would have the opportunity. But it's usually during the first three patrols when things would likely happen. But with the acquisition of the bridge simulator, mm-hmm. that will even decrease that percentage even significantly lower, because persons would have an opportunity under simulated conditions mm-hmm. to be familiarized, acquainted with the vessel and its condition and how you should respond in a simulated condition, which makes it even more feasible. I know in the UK and the US, persons actually go through a 3-month training exercise under simulated conditions before they join their new ships. Mm-hmm. And that keeps any mishaps a bit low. But the mishaps, even
are
myself,
we seeing them more these days? I mean, even from my eyes view, I feel like this is the most I've seen or heard about. I agree. I mean, there is an author of a book somewhere, I can't recall his name at this time, that says that if you are at sea, you will come in contact with the seabed at one point or the other. But I think there's been a maybe it's the new world we live in. There appears to be more visibility of it.
Right.
Is that intentional?
No. In terms of reporting?
Yeah.
The thing is, Brother Miller, if you could recall, when we first got those diamond vessels, mm-hmm. was when we had a spate of groundings.
Right.
Because persons were being entrusted with command opportunities
right.
until they became comfortable. Because we had about 3 or 4 groundings then. Mm-hmm. Again, persons were newly appointed. When I returned from Dartmouth, I had my share of incidents too. Early on in my career, I was given command of P-35, P-42, and I made some mistakes, but I never made the same mistake twice. Mm-hmm. I learned from each incident that I experienced, and that is the message I share with aspiring young officers. But in terms of visibility, early on in our careers, and probably before you joined, because I was there a few years prior to you, mm-hmm. groundings are commonplace. Like I said, in the maritime industry, we had a number of groundings, but you rarely heard anything about those groundings other than a little snicker or talk within the organization. Because
right.
some of the best mariners who would have walked through those gates, if you go and you look at those grounding reports, you'll be surprised to see who would have reported in mm-hmm. those. Mm-hmm. Okay? But The current age of advanced information and communication technologies has changed the game. Information about any incident will get out to the media, whether you report it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the government would have invested in excess of $250 million. We are stewards of the people's assets.
Yes.
And we must account for those assets. And we must be good stewards. Okay? And so the burden now and the level of transparency what is required basically compels one to report these incidents. Either the news medias will get it from you or they will get it from incorrect sources. And so it's best to control the narrative by being transparent. And it all comes with being accountable. And so, particularly with those new vessels, given the kind of investment that was made,
mm-hmm.
You simply have to be transparent and you have to be accountable.
Mm. Lawrence Major, how long before she's back in the fight?
I'm being very optimistic. She would have moved from Suriname. She's now in Curacao. I'll be trying to get a date that she would actually be dry docked, because with those dry docking, the floating docks, she will not be lifted alone. And so they're trying to coincide it with another vessel that will be lift for the same period.
Okay.
Because you don't want to lift her. Her work finishes within 8 to 10 days and you're still unable to get her at sea because they're waiting on the other vessel to be completed. But we're hoping very soon for her to be dry docked, for the dry docking underwater aspect to be completed,
mm-hmm.
and for those damages that were incurred, that were received from tropical shipping to be repaired, and attend the 12-day voyage back. But we're being very optimistic to get her back soon, but we have a contingency plan.
Mm-hmm. So with that said, you know, we know of that one being out of the strategic operational plan, out of the decentralization plan, out of the international communications and cooperations plan that you have as commander. What then would you say is the ready state of your organization? What is your battle readiness?
Be ready. Mm. If you reflect on the organization's involvement in response to Hurricane Dorian, and we still have persons deployed in Abaco now conducting security operations. If you look at our involvement, the state of our involvement with the national COVID taskings,
mm-hmm.
the emergency orders, the enforcement of those, we're still providing support to our fellow law enforcement agencies as well as civilian authorities. Up to the high point, about one-third of our human capital was deployed outside of our primary responsibility, which is Border Patrol.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were still able, only through the dedication, the commitment, and the relenting attitude of our members, that we've been able
mm-hmm.
to fulfill those obligations, still protect our borders, and more so, being a socially corporate partner with our deliberate community relations program.
Then, do you then believe, or is that then you saying to me, Commodore King? And if you're just joining me, Commodore Raymond King is my guest. He's the commander of the Defense Force. Are you saying to me then, Dr. King, that you believe that your organization is resourced well enough to meet all of the threats it will face, whether they are international, domestic? Because I don't know if people are aware that is your job, to protect us against threats that are both foreign and domestic. Are you resourced well enough to take care of that challenge?
We will never get all of the resources we need.
Mm-hmm.
Scarcity is real.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so that, therefore, we have to prioritize the scarce resources.
Sure.
But if I were to apply a construct, I'll use the construct from my doctoral dissertation,
mm-hmm.
which focused on organizational agility, but the variables were recruitment, access to technology, and training and development.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to the human capital, we have to continue to recruit. As we expand, and in order to man those sub bases throughout the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, we need additional manpower. Now, the recent legislation would have reduced the amount of persons who are actually exiting the service.
Because
some persons now I'd say 8 out of every 10, they're now opting to stay on year to year for that additional 5-year period. But we still have persons who are departing.
Mm-hmm.
But our attrition rate was up to 3%, and it's difficult for me to measure because it's still a relatively short period. But I could tell you 8 out of every 10 persons who would have left mm-hmm. involuntarily have now opted to remain.
Okay.
But we still need to recruit. Okay? Resources.
Mm-hmm.
We have gotten significant resources, not only from the government investments, but from our regional partners, in particular United States.
Okay.
All of those satellite-based technologies, the maritime surveillance systems that are coming on stream, and we got the bases developed, we got new ships. So we got the resources we need.
Mm-hmm.
Training. Training would have been hampered somewhat from the external training that we were used to, the international courses abroad.
Sure.
The international mobile training teams coming in country.
Mm-hmm.
All of those would have been stymied based on borders being closed. But what we have done, we have looked at the persons who have been trained under the train-the-trainer program. And believe it or not, within the last 9 months, the organization would have executed about 265 training programs and would have touched in excess of 2,500 persons in the organization. So we are...
And those that are make up for your international shortfalls.
International shortfalls and the internal training, because we're using those persons who were trained and certified to drive our internal training programs.
Okay. And so because there are people out there that will not understand this, and so you do not have to worry about operational capacity, because in the instances where you would have disaster prepared management people who have gone off and done international courses, those people are now coming back to train the enlisted men and women what it is that they would have learned on international courses, et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely. And as a matter of fact, I've restructured the organization
mm-hmm.
and I've renamed the Disaster Management Office to Disaster Risk Management Unit.
Mm-hmm.
And I've established a Crisis Risk Management Unit.
Okay.
Because we often forget about crisis.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to focus on the disaster component of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've been running programs every month throughout all of the departments to prepare our members for this hurricane season, and they're better prepared.
We jumped to it a bit early. You talked about attrition rate a little bit. I know that there's been a recent move by the administration to reduce attrition by the expansion of the age cap. But is attrition still something that is playing a major part in the execution of your mandate? Does the attrition rate affect you in a way that it causes your ability to maneuver with the removal of experience? How does that... You told us that you're making up for it through the legislation, but how are you doing it otherwise? Are we ensuring that, I don't know, maybe in the last 2 years or 3 years of a man's career, he is spending that time bringing people behind him in the gap? How are we dealing with that?
Well, succession planning and deliberate succession planning has taken place.
Okay.
And I've been focusing on knowledge, transferring that knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been incentivizing persons to transfer that knowledge, particularly if persons intent on exiting the service.
Mm-hmm.
Attrition would have affected us, particularly the engineers who would have been the first recipient of the training for those new diamond vessels.
Mm-hmm.
A number of them would have exited the service involuntarily. But we have just signed on to a new 3-year long-term service agreement with Diamond, which would have happened at the Ministry of National Security last week. That training is geared towards capturing all of the existing complement of engineers who may not have had that institutional knowledge
mm-hmm.
as a part of that program, where they will be trained and certified in the maintenance, operations, troubleshooting of every equipment and system on board those vessels. And so we're looking at it as a 3-year transfer.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the 3rd year, Diamond moves out, is self-sustaining. It has a maintenance package. It has a training package. It has technical advice for docking periods. It has an inventory control, access to spares, warehousing.
Mm-hmm.
So it has the full scope of what we need in terms of preparing this organization for the future. We need to move beyond breakdown and corrective maintenance
sure.
to a culture of preventative, if we can get there, and that's the intent.
Mm-hmm.
we'll extend the useful life of those vessels for many years.
Now, Commander, let us shift gears again. You know, they are my friends down there, and I know every time they know that their minister or their commander is going to stand before them, there is the one question. We've seen that the government has provided increases all across the government service in budgetary assessments and alignments, et cetera, right? Budgetary allocations have been increased all across government ministries. If I'm not mistaken, I think you have presided over one of the larger promotions that I've ever seen in my knowledge of the force. Can we expect promotions in a time not too long from now?
For promotion and advancement exercises. But let me just reflect on that, the exercise that you spoke of. Essentially, it was a 3 years worth of promotions and advancements. If you average about 250 persons, which is the average per year, that's all it was. It's just a 3-year accumulated number. Okay, and what the intent is to have biannual promotion and advancement exercises, which will be much smaller numbers. It would require a smaller financial outlay. But the intent is to ensure that the promotion and advancement are fair, they're merit-based and performance-based. I've drafted a policy. I'm actually executing a policy that I drafted and submitted to the command from 2018 to revise the whole promotion and advancement concept. And we're slowly unfolding that, and if working out the any tweaking we need to do now to ensure that it is fair, merit-based, and based on performance. And a lot of components would have been taken from the public service regulations in terms of their promotions. And for example, if someone is going to be superseded, that person should be advised ahead of time, and they should know why.
Okay.
So you want to advise those persons.
Oh, this is the military.
But still, see, the thing is something called, I'm trying to call it now, it's a psychological contract you have with an organization.
Sure.
You have certain expectations.
Sure.
Now, we can go ahead and do what we've been doing all of our career. But you don't realize that when you do that, you lose persons who would have been superseded, whether you realize it or not.
Sure.
And I've always used the analogy that, just say if I have an issue with Miller, I may assume that, hey, it's just between Miller and myself. But Miller has his own circle of friends who have their extension of friends.
Right.
And you may not realize that persons who may be supporting you now may be sympathetic to Miller's cause, and you end up losing more support in the long term. If you don't realize those dynamics. But we have to do things differently. And like, for example, persons who would have been flag, and you would have worked in intelligence. And we've had this concept of holding persons down
for the rest of their career. For 20 years,
right. But the public service regulation states that if a person wouldn't have had any impediments for the last 4 years, that should not be an impediment for them moving forward. So it's components like that to bring fairness, to bring reasoned, within the whole process in terms of transforming it.
I hear my music, Commander. That means I'm about to go to a break. Before I go to the break, because when I get back, I want to open the phone lines. The people that said that the economic climate are not good for promotions, do you allow that to affect your decision-making, or do you still offer people to be advanced that are eligible for advancement because you understand what that does to the morale of your organization?
Of course. Talent management is a component of one of my organizational campaigns. In addition to being able to attract suitably qualified candidates, we must do sufficient and do more to recognize and reward those persons. And persons may not realize it. In the armed services, promotions and advancement is the primary incentive for what we do. And at times, the monetary outlay may not be there, but they're happy for the promotion.
Yeah.
They're happy for the accelerated rank, because at some point, the monies will catch up. But the money is irrelevant in terms of being promoted.
Yeah, I actually shared that with somebody the other day. Someone said the other day they should stop calling them promotions, you know, because the people really only care about the money. I said, and they've obviously never been a chief petty officer, because nothing in the world would matter more to me than for you to make me a chief.
Absolutely.
Anyway, I'm going to a break. Don't move. I've got Dr. Raymond King. He's the commander of the Defense Force. He's my guest. When I get back, the phone lines, they're open. 323-6232. 325-4316. 325-4259. You can text me, 422-4796. Let's go to break, Ali. But we'll fight on.
When one suffers, we all suffer. Mental health is health too. If you need someone to talk to, contact the National Suicide Abuse Hotline at 322-2763 or the Bahamas Psychological Association Mental Health Support Lines for adults, 816-3799, and for children, adolescents, and parents, 819-7652. This Mental Health Awareness Month message brought to you by Guardian Radio 96.9 FM.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, quality.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours.
Welcome back. Thank you for staying with me. Commander Raymond King is my guest. Commodore Raymond King. And for those of you that do not know, you know, once you are a commander, you are a commander. So you kind of get to commander and people just say commander, you know, when you get above it. But he is a commodore in rank. Commander of the Defense Force is his title. All right, for those of you that usually get caught up on the name. So we have to get to COVID. You can call me. The lines are open. How is COVID-19 affecting the teams that you have, that you command? And how is that also affecting things like continuity in training, seamanship protocol, etc.? What is the new protocols as it relates to patrols and how you apprehend in this COVID-19 environment?
That's a broad question, but allow me to focus on the squadron side of it.
Mm-hmm.
With the protocols, before the ships proceed at sea, the men and women are tested.
Sure.
Tested a few days prior, tested on the day of sailing. At sea, we exude greater risk management by using our pre-boarding questions to determine the degree of risk of any vessel that they intend to board.
Mm-hmm.
If the risk is considered extremely great, the vessel could be escorted to an uninhabited island, be it to anchor, or taken to a closest port and hand them over to the police, etc. It depends on who it is.
Mm-hmm.
And the risk, we would simply escort them out of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas.
Okay.
In order to safeguard members on board the vessels.
Mm.
And so we have done that effectively.
Okay.
In terms of the training, we had an entry where we had an outbreak, and we've instituted some new protocols whereby persons would be tested prior to,
mm-hmm.
as well as the instructors. And the aim was to keep them in a bubble,
mm-hmm.
to keep the integrity of the training platform. And so we had to reduce our operations, administrative protocols to reduce any unnecessary gatherings. We've adhered to all of the health protocols. Dr. Durbin Johnson and his team has done a wonderful job with the protocols. He devised those and he gives us that professional guidance. He monitors the case numbers, the number of persons quarantined, and we are adjusting the protocols as we go. And so we were able to manage it, even though over a long period of time, the cumulative numbers would be sort of high in terms of the number of persons who were quarantined at any one time.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to be mindful that you'll have, say, a 60-meter vessel with a crew of 60 persons. You have one case on board. That may be just one individual,
right.
But you have to quarantine the entire crew.
Right.
So the quarantine, and then once those persons are quarantined for 10 days to 2 weeks, you don't have those persons.
Right.
And so we had to manage those instances as well. Persons deployed to those static islands, they're tested, and we run the same level of protocols with them. So like the other sister agencies, we had to adjust. I'm satisfied that we've done extremely well, but we continue to tweak.
A text writer here is asking me about retirees and veterans. They want to know, are you aware of what's happening with regards to retirement payouts?
That process, I met in Treen,
mm-hmm.
and the accounting department continues to do those salary progressions. I've signed off on a number of letters on those that were completed to either advise our veterans and retirees whether what they're receiving is the correct amount or whether they are owed, and you may have in some instances, they may owe the public service.
Mm-hmm.
And so that process continues. If I could recall, we may have completed about 3/4 of those salary progressions. But that is an ongoing process. And I must admit that we need to improve the communication side of it.
Because mm-hmm.
what I met in place, the work was being done in good faith. because my finance accounting officer was the one who saw the need to undertake that exercise. But I told him we have to communicate the results because persons want to know, how does it affect me?
Sure. Okay. A text writer here is asking, do you think under your tenure there may be a change in the name of base in the name of the base after the commander of the Flamingo Amos role, since he is the battle-tested commander in the forces history?
Anything is possible. But that's not something that we thought of. We have other tangible ways and means in mind of continuing to recognize Commander Amos' role and the crew of Flamingo. Mm-hmm. But in addition to the Flamingo crew, and I think it's a good point now for me to interject, mm-hmm. and we have deep respect for their sacrifice and mm-hmm. those persons who committed the ultimate sacrifice. But often, Miller and I sat on board vessels that I commanded at sea, and while we were anchored, and I reflected, and I said, but I think we are forgetting a population of persons who would have died in service. Mm-hmm. And my mind often ran across Jeffrey Gibson, mm-hmm. who died on board that captured fishing vessel where he got trapped on the inside. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I said, but we haven't done anything to recognize those persons. Mm-hmm. I remember Johnson, who died saving one of his fellow colleagues.
Swimmers, yeah.
Right. And so I spoke with Commodore Scavallo, who would have built the Flamingo Park and Monument. And I got his consent, and I saw his vision, and he shared it with me, that I was able to include within that monument and park a wall of remembrance to capture persons who would have died in the direct line of service, others who would have died while serving, mm-hmm. and our veteran and retirees who would have died post active service in the Royal Bombers Defense
Force. So it's now the Flamingo Memorial, but a monument wall of remembrance.
No, I haven't changed the name.
Okay.
I've simply included a wall of remembrance within it.
Okay, so let's talk to the human again. We've been speaking to the commander all this time. So what do you say are the things that keep you awake at night as the commander of the Defense Force?
The safety and security of our members, particularly those persons who are deployed at sea, those persons undergoing security operations, persons detailed at static details, for example, persons deployed to the various family islands. It's just the safety and security of all our members. I am fortunate if I could sleep 2 hours straight without jumping up and checking my phone to see.
But people that know that you don't sleep. I'm going to make this public knowledge. If you send Raymond King an email at 5 p.m., you may not get it right back at 5:30 p.m. But if your email goes off at 2:15 in the morning, it's probably Dr. King. That's kind of how he communicates. Commander, then tell us. Are you the sixth Bahamian Commodore? There's been Leon. Okay. If you could in one word define the legacy of the Commodores before you, what would it be? And what do you imagine your legacy will be when you leave?
Okay, Commodore Swinley and Belter. A period of organizational formation, mm-hmm. mass training, capacity building. Mm-hmm. Commodore Leon Smith. He was the pioneer. So his era would have been one of pioneering and growth. Mm-hmm. Commodore Davy Roll, he did a lot of structural development. Mm-hmm. So he would be known for force expansion and structural and restructuring. Mm-hmm. Commodore Scavallo, his focus was refocus, mm-hmm. reconditioning.
Operations.
Right? Commodore Bow was more welfare-centric, mm-hmm. and he enhanced the welfare mm-hmm. of our human capital. Commodore Bethel had focused on the modernization of the Defense Force because he would have received the organization on receiving, as being a recipient of everything from the Sandy Bottom projects mm-hmm. and all of the new communication systems, like the first Marine Maritime Surveillance System. He was a recipient of those. Mm-hmm. And so that is how I would characterize their legacies.
Mm-hmm. And when Dr. King, in our final 2 minutes, when you leave, what do you imagine that the legacy of Commodore Dr. Raymond King will be? And could you tell us what has been your proudest moment in the top chair thus far?
The proudest moment for me thus far has been the overwhelming support, and I'm saying this sincerely, from the organizational members mm-hmm. in terms of the administrative, logistical, and operations aspect of the organization, the level of support, particularly during this global pandemic. Mm-hmm. We have been strained. There have been heavy demands. But we have been relentless. We have been relenting. in ensuring that our borders have been protected, regardless of those demands, and fulfilling all of those other rules. For me, I would like to be reflected as a leader who was transformational, who was able to inspire members to go above and beyond, like what they're doing now, despite those competing demands, a third of our organization being deployed elsewhere and still protecting our borders. And one who would have created an environment, an inclusive working environment, where persons would feel a part of the organization, a part of the decision-making process. Mm-hmm. One who would have engaged the members meaningfully. Mm-hmm. One who would have empowered the members. And one who had an appreciation for diversity in the workplace, generational differences. And one who was very receptive to the incorporation of advanced technologies in terms of realizing great efficiencies.
Thank you very much, sir. Dr. Raymond King, Commander of the Defense Force, has been my guest. Thank you again, sir, for joining me.
My pleasure.
Thank you for coming. And I wish you all the best down there. You know, you all have a very, very special place in my heart. People beat me up all the time and say that I have a favorite. You're very correct. I state my biases so public. The Royal Bahamas Defense Force happens to be a favorite of mine. Anyway, it's Thursday. You all know I say every Friday. I won't be here on Friday, so happy Labor Day. Let me extend that to all of the workers in the community. Also, all of the men in uniform, let me say to you all, continue to march forward. Thank you all for what it is that you do. If you want to listen to me on Monday, tomorrow they're going to be playing the rebroadcast of the show with myself and Her Excellency, Dame Marguerite Pinling. That's going to air tomorrow, so stay tuned for that in case you missed it. But I'm going to tell you this Thursday, like I tell you every Friday, man, do everything in your power you can to be sure that you don't kill nobody this weekend. Greater than that, do even more in your power to ensure that nobody don't kill you. And I'll meet you right back here on Monday. I'm Levin Miller. It's Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. It's your station for fresh news and smart talk. Don't move. They've got the news, and it's next.
Glory, oh, glory, glory.
Hands to the heavens, no man, no